Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is a wonderful way to start the week.
It is.
How was your weekend?
It was good. I had a good weekend. It was nice, and it felt like fall outside.
I know. Got a little taste of fall. I got to go to my favorite foodie event, is Afternoon the Country.
Oh, really?
At Fox Hall down south. And that's about 150-ish chefs, the best in the business there, celebrating the La Dame's Day Escoffier, a women in culinary arts nonprofit, and that funds scholarships for them.
Oh, that's really cool.
We got to meet some of them and got to see some amazing food. They made mac and cheese. And I don't know if you guys are foodies. Did any of you go to this event?
No.
You should definitely go. Okay. They made mac and cheese inside a wheel of cheese. So you take a wheel of cheese, hollow it out, and they're cooking the mac and cheese in the wheel of cheese.
A hub of mac and cheese.
Amazing.
Can you just get your mind around that?
It's too early.
All right. So let's, you ready for the show?
I am so ready.
I don't know. I should have brought some mac and cheese.
Right.
All right. So first up on Atlanta Business Radio, we got Don Moreland and Trey Gibbs, and they're with an organization, a public-private organization called Solarize Atlanta. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hey.
Well, Don, you're the brains of this operation, I hear.
Not so sure about that. Thank
you. Why don't you share a little bit about how Solarize Atlanta is serving folks?
Sure. About a year ago, we got together a bunch of local area community organizations in the Office of Resilience in the city of Atlanta.
The Office of Resilience?
Yes.
Is that a real office?
It's part of the mayor's office at the city.
Correct. There's an actual department that's called the Office of Resilience.
Office of Resilience. That's right. And they actually have an Office of Resilience director.
Really?
Well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. So what happened? So you got there, your meeting?
Yeah, so we got together and we decided we wanted to bring more rooftop solar to the residents of Atlanta. So there's a bunch of really impressive organizations that are part of it. We issued a request for proposal to the local solar community to get bids for to be the exclusive contractors for residential and for commercial. And Hannah Solar won our commercial bid.
And then, so why was it important to give it to one organization?
It's a typical RFP where you want to get competitive bids and try to get the best quality materials for the lowest possible price. Mm-hmm. And we split it up with two different contractors because Atlanta is it's a big city. And we wanted a couple different companies, one that specializes in residential and the other that specializes in commercial.
And then when you're saying Atlanta, are you talking about the metro Atlanta or the city of Atlanta?
It's for our target marketing and education has been just in the city of Atlanta, but the program is open to folks outside of Atlanta as well.
And then the mission is to put solar in more residential and commercial buildings?
Right. This is we call it distributed generation. It's a behind-the-meter application. So you either put it on your roof or on your property, and you use the electricity that's being generated to offset the amount that you would otherwise purchase from somewhere else.
So the solar energy is being captured, and then you're using it first before you click on the traditional electricity?
That's right. There's it's all real sophisticated technology. There's no buttons or levers or anything like that, but that's true. You're using the solar energy first and then essentially using the grid as a backup in case you need more.
And then do most people need more or is the sun enough?
Yeah, most, 99.9% of people are still connected to the grid. Mm-hmm. Solar works best in, you know, during the day when the sun is out and you still want to be connected to the grid for rainy days and nighttime and things like that.
Now, so is that because there's not a good way to capture the electricity from the sun and hold it there to use it when it's nighttime or when there's less sun?
There is. In fact, this program, we've seen a large uptake in battery storage, mm-hmm, technology. People are pairing with the solar. And in that case, you can store the energy during the day and use it later on at night.
Okay, so...
But in a lot of commercial applications, most people are just, you know, going to be in the office 9 to 5, things
right.
along those
so
lines.
So that's when they need it.
Battery storage is not as important as maybe with a residential.
All right, so this is Trey Gibbs. Don, why don't you introduce Trey and why is he important to this project?
Trey Gibbs is the, he's the head of commercial business development at Hanna Solar, and he is leading Hanna Solar in the effort for Solarize Atlanta. He's been around the solar field or industry for a really long time, and we couldn't have a better person working with us for this program.
Welcome, Trey.
Hey.
Now, tell us about commercial solar. How is that different than residential? I mean, I would imagine just it's more.
Yeah, with commercial applications, we have larger panels. There's smaller panels for residential because you've got smaller roofs mm-hmm. to work with and angles and a lot of other issues. But with commercial solar, we use really traditional crystalline panels that are 72 cells. And if you've got a large flat roof, like a TPO roof, we don't need to put any holes down at all. The solar just sits up there about 3 pounds per square foot and makes energy all day long.
So if you have a flat roof, it's kind of a no-brainer then to do this?
It's a best-case scenario, really. The lowest-cost installation that we have to offer is the high-voltage 40-volt three-phase power service to a building that's got a flat roof on it.
Now, there's tax incentives to do this for the commercial
Absolutely.
As well as residential?
Yeah, there are significant tax credit incentives, and that's a tax credit, like at the bottom of the page, which you owe the government, not an income deduction. Just want
right.
to clarify that.
30%, yeah.
Yeah, so there's the investment tax credit of 30% of the total spend. So if you spend $100,000 as soon as the system is turned on in that tax year, you get a $30,000 tax credit.
Wow. And then what kind of savings from an electric bill are you getting typically?
It's pretty easy to get close to 40-50% savings.
Wow.
To go more than that, you need battery storage, but that's available. And it works up really well for retailers, people that have a big box and their hours are, you know, 9 to 5 or the daytime hours primarily. And that they're open 7 days a week is important as well. Those are the people who get the most value and benefit. But back to the tax credits, there's also a depreciation schedule. So a business that owns any equipment, they can start to depreciate that. That's another stream of tax credits. It's based off their effective tax rate. So that's anywhere for a C Corp, another 21% to 35% if they're an LLC. So in total, you could get 54% of your money back if you're a C Corp. And tax credits when you install solar off the total cost. And for an LLC or an S-Corp, around two-thirds is usually what they're getting back in the first year in the form of tax credits. So now you've paid your taxes, and you've got a revenue-generating asset, which is just far better than paying your taxes. You're going to have to do that anyway.
Now, what about, like, how long, if I put that up on my roof, how long does it typically last? Is that something that's a set it and forget it and it's going to last for years, or does it require a lot of updates?
Set it and forget it is a great way to describe solar because it's a 25-year product, and there's no moving parts. It's just a solid-state silicon panels, and they receive the sunlight and turn that into energy. And they have a warranty for 25 years. And typical payback on an investment is about 5 years, 5 to 6
wow.
years. You recapture your total investment a lot in the first year with the tax credits. And then the savings of energy takes a little while to catch up. But then after year 5 or 6, you've got free energy.
So now what is the reason it's not more prevalent?
I think a lot of people looked at solar years ago. It's a pretty old technology. The first solar panel came out in 1954 by Bell Labs, and they were expensive and didn't make a lot of energy, and they've just slowly gotten better. And there's been a massive jump in the efficiency as cell phones and computers and the Internet of Everything have proliferated inside the hardware there. There are silicon chips, and so the ability to make silicon wafers more efficiently, more cost-effective, has helped solar as well because that's exactly what the solar cells are made out of, silicon wafers. So all that industry has kind of moved over to Asia, but Chinese manufacturing is not what it used to be. The Germans have sent their equipment. The Austrians have invested, and so there's really significant infrastructure over there to do high-quality manufacturing. And with the price of the silicon dropping, there's been massive reductions in the cost of solar. It's also producing more energy than it ever has, so it's the payback is better in that regard. And with these new racking structures, you don't have to put holes in the roof. So that's, some big changes. And I think a lot of people looked at solar maybe in the, 80s or the 90s or maybe early part of this century, and it was just too expensive, meant holes in the roof, and things have changed. And so you always got to keep your eye on technology. And I think now we're really hitting a tipping point. Most owner-occupied buildings, if you own the building and you pay the power bill and you start looking at solar, a lot of people get very interested.
And just by explaining the math of it.
It is.
Like, if you forget about the good cause part of it.
Right, yeah. You're saving the earth. You've got clean, renewable energy. You're having an answer here to climate change. Yeah, there's a lot of great PR and marketing reasons to do solar, obviously. But it is a financial equation. I say that I don't really sell solar. I sell equations. Mm-hmm. I show people here, you're going to invest this amount of money. You're going to get this rate of return, but a 10-year IRR is typically in the teens, so it's a good investment.
Right. Now, what challenges does Atlanta have being so wooded?
Well, shade. Shade definitely is a challenge, but for most warehouses and commercial buildings, if you're two or three stories, you're up above the trees or you're at level.
And, right. And you just to put that building around, there, so they had to kind of clear some trees.
They've already done the damage, right, yeah. So we don't really encounter a lot of shade issues in the commercial side like the residential teams do. But they do have some solutions. There are some other products that can handle a little bit of shade and still up the voltage of the panel, so it's still going to produce. But on the commercial side, yeah, we don't really encounter much shade.
So now, how did you guys get involved with the Solarize Atlanta campaign? Like, what drew you to that?
Well, it's a novel idea. Solar crowdsource is kind of helping to counter the typical objections to solar. You know, a lot of people, they don't know much about the products. Do I want Chinese panels? Do I not want Chinese panels? Do I want string inverters or optimizers? Who's a reputable company to install this? What's a fair price? How long does it last? What do I do with these tax credits? I mean, there's a lot of, unknowns because no one's ever bought solar before. It's not like buying a car, to kick the tires, drive it around the block, look under the hood kind of thing. So
it's kind of a leap of faith, right, that it's going to do what you're promising it's going to do?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a proven technology. It's certainly going to work. And so what Solar Crowdsource has been able to do is to do this request for proposal to the whole solar community and find a reputable contractor with the best products and to try and counter all of those typical objections to say, hey, if you've wanted to do solar, now's the time to do it. You got the best price, you've got the best products, and you can join in with everyone else. And the more people who buy, the lower the price gets. So it's a crowdsource, crowdfunding, using all those millennial buzzwords that we got going on right
now.
But the more people who sign up, the lower the price gets is, the main idea there. So we're trying to offer, instead of, each individual buying at a retail level, they can get this Costco group buy. And so now's a great time to look at solar. If you've been interested in it, you need some energy savings. You've got a successful business. You're paying a lot of taxes. You own your building and you've got a flat roof. It's going to be a really compelling investment for you.
Now, is this investment, is this hundreds of thousands of dollars? Is it tens of thousands, $1 million? How much does it cost to...
$1 million. it's all based on the energy
usage. The size.
Right, exactly. So a big manufacturer is going to need a lot more solar than a small law firm. So we like to look at the bills. The way that we get started is we get an address and we go to Google Earth. We start looking at the roof and... Then we ask
for
the
power bills.
So you
can tell just
from
Google Earth, like you'll have a good idea of this is going to work or not work or at what level?
We'll definitely know if there's shade issues. So like downtown Atlanta, you got a 40-story office tower. The shade could be much more dramatic than what trees can do. So so we like to look for that first just to make sure that there's not a massive tower or something that's going to happen. But after we get the address, we can then take our software and see how much solar will fit. And then we look at their bills to see how much energy are they using. We don't want to sell anybody more than what they need. And then we just kind of match up what their investment is going to be. But it's all kind of the same ratio. A smaller building is still going to pay back around 5 or 6 years because the rate's going to be higher.
Right.
a larger building, they'll have a lower energy rate, but they're making more energy. It's still going to pan out about the same.
Right. And then what percentage of businesses that could use solar are using solar?
Well, I would probably a very small percentage, unfortunately.
Like 1%?
Solar of the U.S. grid, Don, where are we?
We're at about 2% of the U.S. grid, mm-hmm. and about 2% here in Georgia. We're seeing a lot more uptake in solar these days than years before because the cost has come down so far, and because those tax incentives that Trey was talking about, they're not going to last forever. So there's actually a small window, a small opportunity where if you're thinking about solar, now's the time to call somebody or to join Solarize Atlanta, get a free solar evaluation, and see what it can do for you. Because rates are set to go up if you're in the Georgia Power service area. We're looking at rates to continue to climb over the next 20-year period of about 3% annually. Solar works as a hedge against right. raising utility rates because the fuel or the fuel source is free. It's the sun. So and there's very little operating and maintenance. So we are on a cusp right now, I think, where we're going to see a lot more solar adoption in the future.
So now the way that this crowdsourced solar initiative is working, is there a deadline that we all have to buy by a certain date and then we're eligible for this discount, or is this something that's an ongoing?
Yeah, so the deadline's kind of driven by a couple factors. One that Don was mentioning, some of the tax credit incentives are going to start to sunset and step down. So after calendar year 2019, the investment tax credit drops from 30% to 26%. And so we're trying to get the word out right now and have everyone sign up and express interest before the end of the year.
At the end of this year.
The end of 2018, that's right. So if someone just needs to sign up, go to our website, solarizeatl.com, and they can put their name and information in there. That will send an email to me, and I'll follow up, and we do free evaluations.
That's residential or commercial?
There is a residential side and a commercial side. Right,
so when you get to there, you can choose which is appropriate?
You can, exactly.
Residential enrollment period has expired. So right now we're just enrolling commercial.
Mm-hmm. But that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it is. It's just a commercial opportunity at this point. And then we're hoping everyone that gets an evaluation will sign.
And that's a free evaluation.
It is.
You have to pay for that.
That's right. No, it's the cost of us doing business. So right. Anyone that wants to express interest, we're happy to meet them and show them.
You can just go check it out and then see if it makes financial sense.
That's right. We can do a lot of it remotely, as I said, looking at Google Earth and getting
right.
Their
bills.
Right,
so it's not
bills.
Like you're rolling the truck out. And
then
we
do try and go and take a look at their electrical service room just to make sure, you know, we've got everything spec'd out. We do got to look at the electrical room a little bit, and then we deliver the proposal, you know, have a face-to-face discussion then and let them consider. And then hopefully everybody will sign before the end of April 2019 is kind of our contracting period, and that way we'll be able to build everything out in the calendar year 2019
to take advantage.
Full tax credit.
Yeah. Now, if I say yes, I'm in, is there more for me to do, or is your team kind of plug everything in and make everything work, or do I have kind of ongoing work to do in order to make this a go?
It's really pretty easy. The main aspect is to sign up and to get us your data.
Right. So I'm assuming I'm in. So I'm going to do this. So now I'm doing this, and now do I have to now educate my team on how to manage this solar stuff, or because they've never done solar before, this is all new to them?
Yeah, we do offer operations and maintenance as part of our installation. There's not a lot to do with the solar. It's suggested to clean the panels every other year. We get a lot of rain here in Georgia, though, so you know, the pollen season is a really rainy time as well. So there's really not a lot to do maintenance wise, but we do offer monitoring, so we can, you know, look at the inverters and see what the system's producing. If there's a problem, we'll find out, be able to go and fix it. Day to day, there's really not a lot that would be taking up new time. But if a company is going to buy a solar array and it's a significant investment, they should certainly learn about it, like any new product that they're going to have in their building, and you know, try and learn how to service it and to follow along. There's a website that you can go to that will show the the production of the energy, you know, every day, every week, every month.
And so, so you can kind of see the savings.
Exactly. And they can track and follow. And if it drops off, then they would know that there's a problem. And we do that type of monitoring for all of our systems as well.
And then you mentioned that it's not, I guess, drilled into the roofs. How do you mm-hmm. handle, like, the weather and wind and things like that?
So we build to the wind codes. We've got 80 installations in Tybee Island as part of the first Solarize program with Solarize Tybee that Solar Crowdsource ran, and we won that one. We did residential and commercial there. We did about 80 installations on the coast. Hurricane Matthew came through the end of 2016, class 4 hurricane.
So what happens?
We didn't lose a single panel.
Wow.
Because we build to the wind codes.
Right.
And so if you properly follow all of the rules and the codes, you really don't have an issue. And so here in Atlanta, I think the wind speed is like 100 miles an hour that we build to. And so doing the solar on the roof, there are some ballast blocks on the edges, but each panel's connected to each panel in a row. Every row is connected to each column.
Right. So
and so it's one monolithic structure, and there's a very low angle to the panel. We have about a 10-degree pitch, and there's a wind screen behind it with the racking system that we use. So the wind can't really get under there and lift it off.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. So if a company wanted to learn more, what's the best way to get a hold of you guys?
And they just go to solarizeatl.com. And there's a lot of information on there mm-hmm. about the program and about the materials and about Hanna Solar and the pricing. That's one thing. The pricing is already predetermined. It was part of the bid that Hanna provided. So a lot of the guesswork is taken out, and you can go on the site and look at the specific specs for the panels, inverters, and racking system. You can look at the pricing and there'll be a green Solarize Now button. Click on that, fill out the form, hit submit, and you're good to go.
And then before we wrap, how did you guys get involved in solar? Like, why was that important to you, Don? Why don't you start?
I'm a recovering attorney, and
see how you kept that on the down low.
Yeah, we'll save it to the end of the program.
Didn't mention that early on.
You want me to sit on the other side of the table? But I'd always had a passion for the environment, mm-hmm. and kind of seeing what's going on with climate change, and see the rise of solar. I got into the industry back in 2011, and you could already see then that this was an industry that was going nothing but up, and that there was really nothing wrong with it. It was a win-win situation for the environment and for the economy, and so I put all my eggs into solar, and here we are.
And Trey, you were trying to invent a solar-powered banjo, I hear.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun, actually. we'll do the picking and the grinning, and it's all carbon neutral. That sounds awesome. But I graduated from UGA back in the 1900s with an environmental science degree, so I've been in the environmental field ever since. And in the 08 downturn, I just realized I got to get into energy because the lights are always on somewhere, and there's renewable energy, which is clean, renewable energy. And so that kind of met my, passions and my career track. And so that's why I got involved with Hanna Solar and selling the real hardware that makes renewable energy.
And before we let you go, you mentioned that you also have a bluegrass band and you got an album.
I do, yeah, thanks. We just played this weekend down at the Chomp and Stomp Chili Cook-Off and Bluegrass Festival. It was a lot of fun. Smokey's Farmland Band is the bluegrass band. I play mandolin there, and we've been together for 14 years now. We've got several CDs and working on stuff all the time. But you can get more info there at farmlandband.com.
Good stuff, Don and Trey. Thank you so much for sharing your story today.
All right, thank you.
All right, hang with us. We've got two more guests. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we got Shannon Worthy, Nicole Stanton. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Now, you guys are with your own law firm.
Yes.
You started together in a more corporate law firm, and you spun off. Like, tell us the story behind this.
Okay. We started with the Cochran firm here in Atlanta. And I started out as an associate and moved.
So associate, that's that's not the highest level.
Bottom
right?
level.
That's the bottom that's level. The entry. Is it entry level?
Entry level. Gopher.
Okay, so you were at a large firm though.
Absolutely.
But you were at a low level. Did you just graduate law firm? Was this your first job?
It was not my first job. As an attorney, we were actually working at competing firms.
You got to lean in there.
We were actually working, Nicole and I were actually working at competing firms.
Oh, so you were competitors. Friendly competitors. Friendly
yeah, competitors. We saw each other in court and we just clicked. We said, we got to hang out with each other. We clicked.
So we decided to take over the world from there. So entry level attorneys, associates.
Mm-hmm. So both of you, Nicole, you were an associate as well?
Yes. I was coming from working as a contract analyst at ThyssenKrupp Elevator Company, which was a great job, but I wanted to move on. So right. I was working as a paralegal at first, and then one of the partners came to me. He said, why are you working as a paralegal? I said, I just want to get my foot in the door, see what you guys had wow. going on. And then I became an associate attorney and met her.
And then so you met.
In court.
And then, so you, were you against each other or you were kind of on the same?
No, we were both debtor attorneys. So
and what's a debtor attorney?
A debtor attorney, it's where you represent the common man. Uh-huh. You are your competitor or not necessarily competitor, but your opposing counsel would be creditors, the creditor attorneys. Right.
Who represent.
Yeah. And I would say sometimes the trustees.
So you guys you had your own clients or you were working with separate clients and you just ran into each other just randomly?
Yes.
So you were complete strangers.
Complete strangers in court at what we call a meeting of creditors. Mm-hmm. She's sitting on one side, looking at her phone, right. I'm sitting on the other. It was love at first sight, honestly.
Who talked to who first?
I don't know. We're both talkers. So
yeah, we just started talking. Like, she had been doing it longer than I had, and I was asking her for some advice, and she just answered and helped me because we were both there because our clients had the same meeting, and maybe I looked like I was lost. I wasn't really talking to a lot of people because I was just focused, and she just answered some questions for me, and we just want to hang out.
Yeah.
So now how did the opportunity to start Stanton and Worthy come into play?
So while being associates at a competing law firms, I was approached by another young lady to work for the Cochran firm. So I grabbed at the idea,
right.
went and worked there for maybe a year or two. And then after a year or two, I asked Nicole if she wanted to come over as well.
So you're recruiting.
Yeah. I was poaching.
Poaching, right?
I was absolutely poaching. And
did you go?
Yes.
So now you're both at Cochran, and you're both doing, is it bankruptcy? What
yes.
is the category?
We were doing bankruptcy.
And then, but is Cochran known for bankruptcy or they're?
Absolutely not.
That's kind of like a side hustle for Cochran, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You know, they're known for criminal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. criminal defense work. So, the bankruptcy division was very, very new, and I was brought over to help develop the bankruptcy division because I had been doing it for some time, and I ended up moving up to the managing attorney, and that's when I brought Nicole.
Is that the highest?
Almost. No, partner.
Partner's
would be,
highest.
Would be highest. Right. Whoever's getting paid the most.
That's how it works. It's a simple system.
Absolutely.
So now.
Very simple. Even though you may be doing more.
It doesn't go by work.
Yeah, no.
It definitely doesn't work like that. So now you're the managing attorney at Cochran's bankruptcy, but it's a small kind of side thing and it's not their focus.
Yes.
And they decide to spin it off, or you said, I'm out of here. I'm going to start my own thing.
No, actually, the partner, he wanted to retire.
The person that's in charge of all of the bankruptcy for Cochran said,
He was tired. He said, I'm finished. And actually, he was in Alabama, Dothan.
Oh, so he wasn't even here in Atlanta?
No.
Yeah, the managing folks that essentially partner with Cochran, they were in another state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they managed us from afar.
From afar. So that must have been even better for you guys, right? You were loving that.
That's accurate.
So let me get off.
So now an opportunity arises for Shannon.
Yeah.
Not Nicole.
Yes. Yes, her opportunity. I was like, yes, yes. Awesome.
So now they said, hey, did they say,
do you want the firm?
They said that. They didn't say, do you want to be managing partner? They said, no. We're done with this. This experiment is not working.
He said, I'm old. My kids are off at college. They're getting married. Neither one of them wants to be lawyers. So I'm like, what? Really? So do you want the firm?
It was that simple?
I want the firm. Yes.
Wow.
Oh, can so we that curse? I'm sorry.
Well, we can now. Okay. So what? So now, does this happen in real life? Like, is this
unusual?
Really
doesn't. It
sounds unusual.
When she pulled me in her office, that's it.
It doesn't happen like this.
We're doing this.
Yeah, it normally doesn't happen like this, but it did. So for that, I am forever grateful to Mike Brock. I know he probably isn't listening, but he's like a father figure and also a fairy godmother all rolled into one. He would probably hate that I said that.
So now, what does that mean? You have the firm? Like, you have to leave now, or you can stay even there?
No, I don't have to leave. I was giving everything.
But what did we? It's like we knew. It's
the timing.
The timing was profound. It was great because we had already lightly, in a very background way, started and talked about starting our own firm.
Absolutely.
Oh, with or without this?
Absolutely.
So you were
in general.
Wow.
Like we were leaving.
Really?
We were going to leave.
We loved the opportunity. We were having a great time, but we had talked about it. And so then the opportunity was in itself not go.
No, I mean, but we had already started, like, we had taken, like, our first little small case and
got, what, $50?
I saw a picture. Victorious in that case. But we knew that we were going to leave and branch off and start our own.
So were you both entrepreneurial? Like, was this always in the back of your head? Because that's different. One thing is working for somebody else where you just show up and they give you the case and then you're doing what you do. But another thing is now it's an eat what you kill world. This is your own firm now.
So I think being the managing attorney, like you said, you eat what you kill. So I was doing a lot of the killing. And then seeing my portion.
And you weren't eating enough.
I was like, what is this? So that prompted me to. Okay,
but did they teach you that in law school? How much of law school is that part of the business?
0%.
Is that?
I learned from just asking questions. I was probably. You really don't learn that much unless you maybe take a course or that person just
if you do like a clinic or something.
Yeah.
But so you're in law. So what do you think lawyering was when you were in school?
You see me just like doing the Barney rubble blink.
Right.
I don't know. Like in school,
you're
studying. It's not practical. They really don't teach you how to be a lawyer. You're just learning history and not even the mechanics of.
What about the humanness of being an attorney?
You absolutely don't get that. You just have to experience that.
You have to know.
And you have to have life experience. Now that I think about it, I think I probably would have taken some time off before going to law school and just lived life.
Right.
As opposed
just to get more context of what the world's really like.
Yeah.
As opposed to this heads down, I got to study, I got tests, and I got to pass things. And it's a lot of pressure, like kind of. Learning pressure rather than kind of human interaction pressure?
Absolutely. I learned a lot from my father. My father's still a practicing attorney, I think, because I swear every time I talk to him, I'm golfing, I'm doing this, and hanging out with my frat brothers.
He gets a check from
that's why I wanted to be a lawyer. Because both of my parents own their own business. They branched off from working for like a hospital or a firm. My dad worked for General Motors for a while. And in the legal department, and he was an accountant. He did a lot. And so then I learned from them. So I kind of just watched him. We actually went to the same law school. So although it was a lot of reading and keeping my head down and just focusing, I had a great time in law school. And I just went to people that I knew I could get some advice from because I thought I want to get out in the world and actually know what I'm doing.
Right.
So I started working other jobs like in real estate so I can get the human aspect of it. And I did take a year off before I went to law school.
And then
school.
Having grown up in a family of lawyers, that gives you a different perspective. You're seeing what it's like when
the good stuff. My dad didn't seem too stressed out. Or if he handled it very well.
Now, what about bankruptcy side of things? Like, why'd you choose that? I mean, you could have picked a million different specialties.
Definitely could have picked.
Just kind of fell into it.
So what do you like about it? What's the...
Exactly what you just stated, the human aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I think what led a lot of our clients to actually filing bankruptcy What do you think the number one reason is individual file? They file bankruptcy.
Medical cost fees.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That is the reason.
Yes, that's
medical.
That's great.
And it's, you know, health insurance is a hot topic right now, especially during the midterm season. A lot of our clients, they've either lost their job or someone has fallen ill or they cannot afford the health insurance.
So it's not people that are like, I'm going to ratchet up $1 billion in credit card debt and then just pull the ripcord.
Rarely get those type of people come to us.
I can't even think of anyone who has done that.
We have some good stories. I mean, I've heard some stuff. Like, really?
But by and large, the typical person filing bankruptcy is a person who is just kind of living life, doing the best they can, grinding like everybody else.
Yes.
And then they're befallen with some unexpected medical issue or something out of the blue happens that they're not financially prepared.
Right. Or they were financially prepared for a year or two. You know,
right.
Like they saved up enough money.
Not for 5 years.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Just the interest is too high or they're still paying on it or they said, let me figure it. They come to us and they were just thinking about filing bankruptcy because they'd maybe do a little research or went to a website and saw something and just filing is beneficial to them. Maybe they're high income and they have a huge tax lien, so
right.
We can get it lowered or just do something so they're not continuously paying on interest
it.
Or get rid
right.
of it in bankruptcy. There's a lot of...
We get a lot of entrepreneurs mm-hmm. who come to us. Entrepreneurs, you know, the dream is real. It's there.
Right.
And you have the hustle and you do it. And then you actually make $1 million.
Right.
And no one told you about taxes. So you're like, what in the world? So they come to us with a lot of taxes. The first 2 years of being a business owner and actually being successful, and they see that money coming in and they didn't know that, oh, hey, I should have been paying the IRS quarterly. Or I should have had a tax escrow account, or mm-hmm. whatever the case may have been. So a lot of the debt that individuals come in with, medical debt, I would say IRS tax debt. I would also say a lot of individuals come in because of a recent divorce, right?
Mm-hmm. So why does a divorce make you go bankrupt?
Because your spouse may or may not have been doing things that you didn't know about, or you guys were splitting costs. Maybe your spouse's credit was like this, so you put these things in his or her name, or in your own name, excuse me, and you're left with that. Maybe you didn't have a good, I'm doing air quotes, a good divorce attorney that didn't divvy up everything, so you were left everything. Maybe
follow
decide, I just want to walk
right.
from everything. The debt is just following you from that. From that marriage that dissolved.
So now just walk me through, like,
children.
I'm. What's the trigger for me? If I'm thinking about doing this, is it I'm just getting overwhelmed with bills that I can never pay? Like, what is the thing that's like, you know what, I got to call the Stanton Worthy folks because this is, I can't breathe.
Options.
No.
Like,
go ahead. I think it's that there's a lot of options with bankruptcy and filing and in the consumer law realm that people don't know about. So they think they have an issue or they're stuck and, you know, they're getting threats and having creditors call them and
so
tell them all
these
things.
Those are symptoms. If I'm getting a threat,
symptoms.
If somebody's saying, hey, where's my money? And I'm getting calls or then I'll show up at my door, right? Or registered letters. Like, what's the thing that's like, okay, I better start paying attention to this. This is not going to go away.
I always tell my clients it's not necessarily the threats or the letters. The symptom for me when I say, hey, you need to probably come in, if you're not sleeping because of money.
So what's
happening.
If you're
so
not
it's stressing
sleeping,
you.
Yes,
you're
stressed,
it's affecting your
sleep.
Mental health.
Absolutely.
Then this is something you should at least have a conversation.
Yes, you should definitely have a conversation with one of us. And it doesn't necessarily mean you are behind on anything. We get a lot of individuals that come in, they may have lost all of the equity in their homes.
Right.
And they may have taken out a home equity loan.
Right. So now
we
what?
We can get rid of it. We can. You don't have equity anymore, so we can do what we call stripping or discharging the full mortgage lien, the second mortgage or the junior lien. So we can do that.
On your home, yep.
Yeah. So I wouldn't necessarily say if you're getting the threats, but if you're just kind of like, hey, things aren't the way they used to be.
If you're losing sleep over this,
yes.
So you feel internally that something is kind of amiss, then I can call you up, and then what are some of the questions you're going to ask me?
Will this affect my credit? Is a lot of...
Well, some of the questions...
That yeah, what are you going to ask me?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant they ask.
What is your income?
What is your income?
We want to know...
What happened? Is there an emergency right now? Are you facing like a foreclosure, repossession? And we have to get very specific.
So they got to tell you the truth, not what they tell their buddy at the club.
I may think it's emergency, but they... Right? Oh, yeah. Please tell us the truth, because this is a confidential communication.
But that's the thing. People think... Like,
I don't know
no
why
one,
people lie to their doctors but and they lawyers. Lie.
Right.
Because that's so...
Right. They're there to help you.
Tell the truth to.
You know, you're not telling your doctor that, you know, you're not eating right. Like, right. That's just silly. So this is the same relationship, right? You're there to watch my back to make sure that I'm going to get through this.
Yeah,
so I have to tell you.
Hard conversations.
But they don't tell their spouse, right? They don't tell their accountant. They're not telling anybody. This is all, that's why they're not sleeping.
Absolutely.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point.
That's the reason why they aren't sleeping. Most of the time, they aren't telling their spouse. Like you said, they aren't telling the accountant either. So this is a time to really lay it all on the table.
Right.
There's no judgment. We have to ask the hard questions. We have to ask, hey, it says per month you make $3,000 and your bills are
$1,500
right, or $5,000 or $1,500 and it's like, where's the rest of the money?
And Shannon
so and
gets
I,
real
but I have
blunt.
To ask that. I have to uncover like what are the addictions you may have. People don't want to talk about the addictions.
Right, the stuff that's not showing up in the checking account.
Yeah. Yes. And it could be something so small, you know, a Starbucks addiction. It could be
yeah,
could
let's
be
go
that.
With
People
that.
Really
Nordstrom, let's see your bank accounts. We have to
so
ask.
So it
those,
could be the really small things, and you don't realize how much it is actually impacting your life.
Tithing is a big one. We've had to have conversations with people about
they're tithing too much.
To their detriment.
On Friday.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
You are not
they're
paying
being
your
too
mortgage
generous.
Because
being too
you're
generous.
Spending. I you're paying mean. Almost $650, $700, maybe $1,000 a month in tithes. That's a very hard conversation. Generally,
older generation. Mm-hmm. And it's usually when their income shifts, when they retire.
Right.
So they can't tithe the same way.
Right.
So something has changed.
Right.
And they don't. No, there hasn't been a change. It's like, yes, you're in retirement.
Right, you don't have
now. You have a pension.
And it's a good pension.
Yeah, very good.
And it's not. We're not saying don't. Oh, that's a hard conversation.
Right.
Yes, you will still be loved. And we have to find out sometimes, where is this pressure coming
I'm
from?
I'm sure that's not mentioned in law school.
No.
The tithing conversation.
No, that's an on-job learning experience.
Wow.
And I had to wipe my brow sometimes because, you know, sometimes people look at it as this young attorney or this young female attorney is telling my grown self this
that has lived the life already.
My life? Okay, but we do get a lot of respect. Our clients are respectful. And, you know, when we get that little hesitation, we get them right on together. And it's fine. And
well, they know that you're watching their back. You
absolutely.
Have to ask the hard questions or else you're never going to get to the really core issue so you can help them be done with this.
Yes.
Now, okay, so you go through my core issue. You find all my problems. Now we have... You say, okay, I can take this. This is something I can help you with.
Yes.
Now, what does help me with mean? Like, what does file bankruptcy, does that mean, oh, my problem solved, everything went away, and now I just leave the office and I'm good? Like, is this something that takes a day, a week, a month, a year?
Depends on what type you file.
Yeah. So if you do a Chapter 7, it generally takes about maybe, I would say, 4 to 6 months before you receive an actual discharge, before all of your debt is discharged.
And discharge means goes
away?
Wiped
out. It goes away. So unsecured debt, credit cards, medical debt, if you had any old repossessions, foreclosures, evictions, things like that. All
personal
of that
loans.
Gets personal loans, depending on if you had collateral,
yeah.
If you used anything as
when you
collateral.
Got the personal loan, that gets a little tricky.
Or business loans.
Or business
even
loans.
Government loans, mm-hmm. Small business loans.
So you
all of that is dischargeable.
Wow.
And people don't realize.
Except
that.
For student loans.
Oh, my That's goodness.
Sometimes taxes is dischargeable.
The last bastion.
The floodgates would open.
Yeah, sometimes tax debt is dischargeable. You have to look at it, but sometimes it is.
Yeah, so a Chapter 7 generally takes about maybe 4 to 6 months. Most people don't realize you get to keep your home or your vehicle if
you file a chapter. Is that state by state or is that Georgia rule?
It's
or
federal
is that,
law.
That's a federal law.
It's federal. Bankruptcy is federal. Bankruptcy is federal. There are some state guidelines sometimes. Yes, just
state exemptions or protections that you can have depending on what state you're in. So you have to be in Georgia for a certain amount of time, the greater portion of 90 days, to get the protection of the Georgia state exemptions. What that means is that if you have something worth $1 million, you can't file a Chapter 7 because the exemptions aren't going to be enough to protect everything. Right.
Or you could. You could. We would just liquidate it. Or the trustee would liquidate it. And
you wouldn't be able to keep it.
Right.
So now, is this something that your clients are only like millionaires or are your clients like regular people? Like what?
We get everything.
What does it take to be a client of Stanton & Worthy?
So we get everything. We get people who take the bus to our office, to people who pull up in Porsches. So, and everything in between. Mm-hmm. We get everything. So
everything.
It really depends. Like I said, if you are losing sleep over your finances, if you don't have equity in your home, if you have credit card bills and you were trying to pay off your medical debt with your credit card bills, then you need to come see us. If you no longer want that that Porsche because you were going through a midlife crisis and your wife is making you get rid of it anyway and you're like, really, I can't really send it back, you know, we can help you.
Now, so the fees to do a bankruptcy, is that thousands, tens of thousands? Like, you're going after people who don't have money, right? Or their money is challenged? So that's kind of a weird spot to be.
Challenged. That's...
You talked about the Chapter 7. That's kind of like the bank. That's the bankruptcy that gives you really that fresh start. You can keep what you want to keep. You know, keep making your car note, and then walk away from all the other like.
And the filing fees aren't substantial. So a Chapter 7 filing fee is $335, and the attorney's fees can run you anywhere from $1,000 to $2,000. And we don't make the clients pay that up front. You have a payment plan. You can pay that over 6 to 8 months if you want to.
So if you're going down their list of assets and you see that bankruptcy from another lawyer is on there, that they're paying payment plans, like you can discharge that?
Yeah, we've done that before.
We've done that. We've seen law firms on the credit reports
seen
and
law
stuff
firms.
that we've done worked that at.
You can't do bankruptcy like every year, right?
No, you cannot.
No, you cannot.
There's a time frame. It's 8 years.
You can, but you'll get banned and we won't represent you.
Right.
Right.
But
you can try.
You don't
can
want
try
the chronic bankruptcy person.
No,
that's
you don't want the
client.
Abuser.
The abuser.
Right. You don't want the abuser. But the Chapter 13, that can get a little pricey, but you are not paying that. So a Chapter 13 is for a minimum of 3 years, a maximum of 5 years. And this is a complete restructuring of your debt.
So that's not discharging. Restructuring is different.
Right. Some of the debt may be dischargeable. So you have what we call a 0% Chapter 13 and a 100% Chapter 13. A 0% Chapter 13 is for individuals who may have gotten behind on their mortgage or car payments, and we consolidate that debt into one monthly payment, and they make that payment, and then all the rest of their debt is usually dischargeable. Mm-hmm. If they're in a 100% case or plan, they would have to repay everyone. So it's a complete consolidation.
So is it all or nothing, or is there a spectrum? Like, is there a 50% or...
We do have individuals who pay pools back, but this is all based on your income.
Yes.
So there is a median income requirement that you have to meet depending on your household size. So I believe for a household of one, what is it now? Like for the state of Georgia, and this is where the state law comes in. So I think it's like 49, maybe 50,000. Household of three, maybe 65, and so on and so forth. If you are over the median income, you would likely be in a 100% Chapter 13 where you're repaying everyone.
Or if you have an asset that has equity in it that cannot be fully protected, such as your home is worth $22,000 or $40,000 more than the lien on it, things of that nature we look at. There's a lot of different elements. So even if you're in the 3 to 5 year repayment bankruptcy, paying back all of your creditors, we do get that question a lot. Well, I'm paying everybody back. Why am I hiring y'all? If you there's benefits, you're not paying back interest, you're paying it back over 3 to 5 years. We could still lower the interest rate on your car and work that out. There's generally you are definitely saving money, saving time in a 3 to 5 year period.
And is
just making one payment.
But with you, is it always bankruptcy or nothing? Or is there like kind of credit counseling to help me work through or restructure some of this so that I don't have to file bankruptcy? I'll still pay your fees to help me kind of restructure and you guys help me get a better deal or negotiate a better deal with the creditors?
Yes, we've do done that before. As well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
when you come into our office, and I think this is what separates us from our competitors, my goal is, this sounds so bad because it's like, it's my business, right? My goal is not to get you to file bankruptcy. If you do not need to file, I'm going to tell you, you don't need to file.
Right.
You have other options.
Because you yes. weigh the cost benefit. Okay, this is going to affect your credit. There's some negative ramifications of this. It's not just
yes.
the thing that makes it's magic wand that makes everything get better. There's a price
right.
you're paying
you
for
it.
This. And then so you educate them about the price, and then you help them decide, you know, on the ledger which side works best, right? Maybe
yes.
it's best to, you know what, why don't you get a second job, hunker down, and just, you know, pay off
budget.
Some of this stuff.
Exactly.
Because the amount isn't worth, you know, filing bankruptcy, right?
Right.
And that's and sometimes that's, the answer, right? And you just send them
is.
On their way.
And
that most attorneys wouldn't do that. They'd just take the money and then be done.
And just file and ruin
right.
their credit. And absolutely.
Sometimes
you know
it is about that. Organizations helping budget, like
and
you said.
And just having that conversation with
right.
them saying, hey, here's the real problem. This is what I suggest that you do. Now, if they will actually do it. There are some individuals, they actually need the babysitting.
Right.
We do have clients that come back every 5 years, like, hey, I need to file again. Because they like the structure. They like the babysitting.
Right.
The,
right.
There are people like that.
That'll be another business for you, to work, figure out a plan for those people.
Right. Yeah. Instead of them filing. And some people, they just know, like, oh, you know, I did run up the credit cards. I know I won't have to pay the interest if I do a 100% Chapter 13.
Yeah, they're getting a little too educated.
Yeah. Google. Yes. Blame it all on Google. Google University.
Google tells them things. I'm like, no, we can't do that. We absolutely cannot do that.
And it's much better to kind of work with professionals like you if you're going through this than to do one of these, you know, go
absolutely.
To Google
absolutely.
This or go to the Office Depot and get a form that, you know.
Or try to do it pro se. I had a judge. I can't remember which judge it was, but I remember being in the courtroom and he was talking to a pro se bankruptcy.
Pro se,
filer.
What does that mean?
It means you do not have an attorney.
You
filed,
without,
you filed
an attorney.
Without an attorney.
Right.
And he said the statistic of an individual being successful in their bankruptcy without an attorney is, well, not being successful is about 80%.
Wow.
That's accurate.
So
there's just so many.
There's little stuff that you don't know. You don't know what you don't know.
Things that you can do, or just you may not, if you don't know something, you're not going to get the benefit of
right.
that. And you may have just wasted a filing because essentially I say it that way because when you come to us, we have to still consider that filing even if it wasn't successful. And that it was a filing within the previous year or 2 years or mm-hmm. whatever may have happened. That's generally with the Chapter 13s and 7s, but more so the 13s because there's so much involved in the 13. Or
so,
it just depends.
So now if there's a business person out there that's listening that is having sleepless nights, that is worrying about you know, their financial future, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Our website, stantonandworthy.com. And is spelled out Stanton and Worthy, or via social media.
We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram, Stanton and Worthy.
You've gotten a client on Instagram. They just Instagrammed you?
Yes.
That's possible?
Yes. DM. Slide in our DMs.
Really?
That's
a new world.
That is true.
It's a new world.
Facebook, oh, we've gotten some interesting messages, but most of them are professional. And, yeah, people on social media, look at our story. We were in the AJC. They did a lovely article. I'm very grateful and appreciative of that. So,
or via Google Business. You can text us.
Mm-hmm.
And we have people text us their
yeah.
inquiry, so we'll respond. It's actually us.
It's
it is paralegal. It's not a legal assistant, although we should kind of give
it's
them
time.
That task. It's time to move on.
All
you
right.
can have the phone this week.
And that's stantonandworthy.com?
Yes.
That's correct. Thank
Good
you.
Good stuff, Nicole and Shannon. Thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you
for having us.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.